Hey you, it's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. This week, the guys are talking about surrendering in India. Let's listen in to the conversation.
Welcome to an impromptu episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Are we starting with a big cough from you?
Yeah, better to get it out, you know. This is India in the morning, everybody. Let's go with the gremlins. Don't they?
It's so beautiful here. We decided to do an impromptu podcast, didn't we?
It is, yeah.
It's just lovely in these grounds.
So I'm going to start with a rap.
Go ahead.
No, I can't now.
Why?
I'm a bit shy on my camera. Kick that boss, what? Jam nitty gritty. You're listening to the boys from the big bad city. This is Jam Hat. Do you remember the rest of the words?
No.
Friends tell me I am crazy.
Oh, yeah, I do know them. Yeah, I do. I need to listen to music to actually... Okay. To actually...
So, I wanted to talk this morning. When I was on the... when you're on a coach ride here... Which we were on a 7-hour coach ride.
It was a long coach ride.
God, I was, you know, stuck to the window. Help me! Get me away!
You were like a little kid, actually. You came up to me at one point. I'm bored. What am I going to do?
I was bored.
So?
You said to me, you're bald. Get a wig. I said, no, I'm bored. Bald.
So what did you come up with? Because I know with good information when you're bored like that.
So Joseph Campbell, great philosopher, he was... how you would know Joseph Campbell is that George Lucas was one of his students, and George Lucas obviously created Star Wars.
See, now that would have been a clever way to start the podcast with the Star Wars thing.
Why? Because Star Wars.
Because we're just about to talk about it.
All right.
Anyway.
So he's the guy that was responsible for I had some milk this morning. This is what milk does to me. It makes me cough. So if I'm coughing, please excuse me. It's dreadful. Dreadful thing. Anyway, so Joseph Campbell, great philosopher. If you ever get a chance to read some of his stuff, some of it's really intense. But he did a lot of study on archetypes. And that's where George Lucas came up with the concept of Star Wars. Because Star Wars is basically the story of a father and a son and the battle between the dark and the... Keep it down there. Anyway, so Joseph Campbell Young all said that there are unconscious patterns running all the time within us, right? They have energies attached to them, and if one of these patterns is I'm not good enough, you'll spend your time and your money on not appreciating assets, trying not to feel these energies. Now stay with me. And there are banks, businesses, organizations and fraternities that understand the psychology of this and market to this desire. So I've got more. So, so it costs to do nothing about these, and it pays to stop them. Meaning, it costs you to do nothing about running these patterns, and it pays to stop them. When this happens, you are now free to use these energies. So when you stop them, you now contain your own energy, and you're now free to use these energies to create worlds and materialize the reality that inspires you.
Okay. That's really good. But you need to talk about that now, because you need to talk to me about it
in layman's terms. Okay. Yeah. So if we're running patterns inside of our lives, right? So one of the things I say to a lot of our inspired lifers is, at this point in time in your life, you know that you've earned millions of dollars, right? Most people have earned at least $1 million in their lives by the time they're about 30, 35. By the time they hit 65, they have earned millions of dollars based on rate of inflation, based on inflation of wages, etc., etc. But one of the concepts I say to people is, where has all that money gone? And when you stop and look at it, 99% of the time, the money has gone into non-appreciating assets. And that's a habit, but in actual fact, it's a cycle. It's an unconscious cycle that is running in your life. And it's an unconscious cycle that is running based on the fact that you don't want to feel certain things within your life.
So an unappreciating asset meaning something that is is reducing in value, not growing in value.
Yeah. Because a non-appreciating asset is anything that is quick fix quick book.
Yeah.
Gives you the quick experience. You know, you come home from work and you want to run over and grab the beer and smash down a beer because you don't want to feel what it is not to be there anymore. Or you don't want to deal, you don't want to take work home. So the only way to not take work home is to smash down some beers.
Right. So you were saying, so just go back to the quote then, or the thing you were saying then was that you, when you're running an unconscious program,
yeah,
you will...
So there's energies attached to that. And if that unconscious program is, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not wise enough, I was abandoned, I was neglected, you will use your energy to use it and point it towards non-appreciating assets so that you don't have to feel that stuff. So you don't want to feel that stuff. So in order not to feel... You will use your money to try and feel something else, to try and get the quick satisfaction as opposed to the long-term gratification.
Well, I would question that. I wouldn't say that you want to feel something else. I would say that it's more a distraction from feeling. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, because...
But to distract from feeling, don't you have to get that you have to feel something else?
Well... Not necessarily.
You can never not feel.
No, I get that, but it's like, you know, Brené Brown says, it's like you're numbing the feeling of feeling not good enough.
Yeah.
So when you're numbing the feeling of feeling not good enough, you're distracting yourself from feeling not good enough.
Yeah.
So you numb that feeling, but you can't selectively numb. So you're numbing the joy that you could be feeling in that moment, or you're numbing the... So it's almost like distracting yourself from feeling altogether. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of how I see it anyway.
Well, I think you might be thinking then there about antidepressants. I don't think you're thinking about the fact that you go out and you go and buy a car because it gives you this short-term...
Oh, no, I agree with that. I agree with it.
So that's
that
I'm depreciate. Talking about.
Yeah, I get what you're saying now.
Non-appreciating asset.
So that it gives you this short, almost quick burst of feeling...
Yeah.
Good about yourself.
Yeah.
No, I understand what you mean with that.
So
with that, but to me that distracts you from the truth of what's really happening.
Yeah, so in some cases, you know, we're in a world of not feeling. You know, it's easy for us to buy our way out of the wisdom, to buy our way out of the lesson, to buy our way out of the connection. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
You know, we want to, and as I said, you know, there's organizations, business, banks, fraternities, that bank on the fact that you're able to do that.
Totally.
You're able to buy your way out of something.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
I know there's
the alcohol, the cigarette companies,
the car companies, you know, the engine, you know,
whatever.
The electronics companies, all of these companies know and understand that that is something that you will want to feel.
Yeah.
So the other thing is that, you know, that stuff, that same energy that we're trying not to feel over there is actually the energy that we need to be able to create what we want. So when you're doing that, when you're not trying not to feel, something outside of you has control of your feelings and emotions.
Yeah.
You understand? And it's organizations, banks, fraternities, they are controlling. That's why they advertise you to make you look at, oh my God, I want to look like that beautiful person in the ad. Oh my God, I want to feel like that person feels when they drive that four-wheel drive. Oh my God, I want to feel what that person feels like when they drink that drink.
So they're in charge of what you're feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're totally controlling what
you're
feeling.
They're in charge of what emotion or what's happening for you in that moment because you're running this unconscious program.
And I think also, you have to understand that we fuel that. You know, we fuel that by trying to escape all the time. When you're in places where you can't escape, like India is somewhere you can't escape.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I remember... years ago writing a piece and it's in STP writing a piece about, you know, how, you know, Westerners pay for the privilege not to look, but when you come to India you can't not look. And when I say not look out here, I say you really have to face yourself on the inside.
You
really got to look deep inside of yourself and go, okay, who am I? Why am I here? I feel very blessed with what I have now as opposed to what the rest of the world has. And then you also, there comes a point where you start to think, you know, these people have nothing and they're feeling better than I'm feeling. You know, they're more humble than I am.
Yeah, they have nothing in our Western sense of the word.
Yeah, materially. But they have so much spiritually. They have, you know... And I think it's important to understand what spirit is, because, you know, we're about to go up to the yoga capital of the world. So we're about to go up into Rishikesh. And when you get up there, like, you really see piles of Westerners coming into this place, you know, chasing this spiritual enlightenment, you know, and everybody's like behaving really spiritual, not realizing that that's actually not spirituality. The minute you put spirituality in a box, you jump in that box with it. If you think that spirituality is meditating on the side of a mountain, you're fucking so far from the truth, you know. If you think that spirituality is you know, sitting under a guru and following a guru, you've done is handed your power over.
Totally.
You've just lost yourself, handed your power over, and you are absent in your own life. So
100%.
you make yourself fucking redundant when you do that.
Spirituality
stuff.
Is in every moment, in every day.
Yeah.
Like sitting here, like in this beautiful place, listening to the birds, having a chat.
Yeah. Everything.
Everything
is spiritual.
Yeah.
And when you're feeling
you've got that ant that's crawling all over you is spiritual at the moment. There you go.
Oh, no, he's a big one too. When you're get back, fell temptress. When you're understanding your spirit is to understand your energy, right? And when you're trying to just be one energy, you're suppressing something and trying to express one thing.
Yep.
So you're actually squeezing your spirit. Does that make sense?
Just say that again.
When you're trying to be spiritual over here, you're suppressing one thing and trying to just be something else.
Yeah.
So in actual fact, you're squeezing your spirit. You're limiting your connection in any one moment because you think, okay, if I shave my head and I put on an orange robe...
And I call that spiritual, then you're limiting what spirituality is and therefore your spirit is squashed.
Right, because you're limiting the other parts of yourself that you're trying not to be.
Yeah, so you going out with your mates... At night,
it's spiritual
because your spirit comes alive in a different way.
And I think that, you know, I was getting to a point there. When we're up there and we're watching this happen, I remember sitting around and watching, you know, American gurus being followed by thousands of people and watching these people just squeeze the spirit out of themselves to appease this spiritual leader, you know, and trying to be this person for them. And when you do that, you create something that you're not, so you lose yourself. You know, you create something that you're not, and you lose your own depth, your own connection with who you are. And I think it's very important for people to understand that at any moment, you are being spiritual. Also, though, that at any moment, you're responsible for the energy that you're bringing to a place.
Yeah.
You know, that's your responsibility.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I'm arguing, that's spiritual. And spirit is just... it's just an expression of yourself and being free to just express yourself at any moment of time.
So, let's just go...
Go ahead.
Sorry, you're still making a point.
Let's go back. The place I want to get to is I want to get to the point where we're talking about just letting go. Right?
Right, yes. You started with the thing that said... When we're running a program, we're allowing all these things.
Yep.
We're investing in short term,
right?
So, the question I was going to say is, okay, let's talk about the opposite, or let's talk about what instead of doing that, like we said in the last podcast, I think you don't have a choice between having a program or not having a program. Like Russell Brand says, you have a choice between having a conscious program or an unconscious program, right?
Yeah.
So we'll just
briefly touch on the four levels of consciousness, then, right?
Yeah.
You know the four levels of consciousness.
Yeah, I do.
So you have conscious, so you have unconscious incompetence.
Yeah. Where you don't know what you don't know and you're not good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. So stuff's going on, you don't know what's going on.
You're just completely disconnected and running something.
Yeah.
You have conscious incompetence.
Where you know stuff is not going okay, but you're conscious about it.
Then you have conscious competence.
So you have to think about your program and what's happening.
Then you have unconscious competence.
Meaning that it's just so natural to you that you're competent.
Yeah. So in terms of that, it's about being so natural that you're okay with yourself no matter how you are.
Right.
No matter how you are.
Right.
I'm okay when I have to argue. I'm okay when I have to hug and hold and love. And it's just as difficult to try to you know, there's been times in my life where, you know, I've been fighting with my wife. And there's been times in my life when I've known I've had to hug her and be close to her. And the energy that you use to resist both of those points are exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, they're exactly the same amount of pain.
Yeah.
So, I want to talk now about surrendering to that part of you.
So that you can get to that point.
So that you can actually get to that point, right?
Yeah.
Which is, so, surrender is a really interesting thing, right? I was having a chat this morning with one of the guys here, who has been going through some stuff, and in terms of a breakup, and it's been going on for a long time. You know, it's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
And I started to talk to them about, I started to talk to him because I could see that, you know, we make reasons to hold on to things. You know, we make reasons and excuses to hold on to stuff.
Yeah.
This has got to happen over here before I let go. This has got to happen over here before I let go. But in actual fact, they don't want it to happen because they don't want to let go.
Yep.
Does that make sense? And so they're trying to control the scenario and control the situation. So miracles don't happen in controlled environments.
Yeah.
They just don't.
Yep.
Miracles happen not in opposition to nature, but in opposition to what we know of nature.
Yes, it's a great St. Augustine.
It's a great St. Augustine statement. So it's not mine.
No, I just wanted to let people know if they wanted to reference it, that's where it came from.
Anyway, so I remember years ago, I'll tell a little story. I remember years ago when I was in a minimum security prison. And there was only me and one other guy in this place. And so when you come from a maximum security situation where it's razor wire, very scary scenario, and then you go from there and you are, you know, you're getting closer to your release. So they section you to see that you're manageable.
So more nervy when you're getting closer to your release because it's coming closer.
Yeah, for sure. This is part of my point. And I remember I was in this place. I was able to see my parents every day. I was, you know, I was free to do whatever I wanted. I trained every night with police officers. I cleaned their cars. I had a running track I could go out and run on. Cooked all my own food. So I was sitting there and it was, you know, I was putting a lot of time into building the seminars in my life when I left this space. So I wanted to be able to build my life when I left this space. And I was putting a lot of time in. And the funny thing is I say time, and the thing that I really felt I lost when I was in there was time.
Time, of course, yeah.
So time was always really important to me. And one day I asked for a computer to be brought in. So I ring my buddy and I say, listen, I want you to bring a computer in. And my sergeant said to me, there can be nothing on that computer. You got to make sure there's nothing on that computer, Mitch. So don't tell, you know. So that was not my intention. It just wasn't within my brain to do that. So I said to my buddy, look, you got to make sure the computer is clean. Don't send anything in. You know, I don't want anything that is going to get me into trouble in here. He's like, yeah, no problem. The computer comes in. Everything, you know, they open the box. There's nothing in it. Bring it in. Set it up in my room. I'm in there. And I'm on the back of my mind all the time. So this is funny, crazy how we create a reality. On the back of my mind all the time is, Jesus, if anything goes wrong here, let alone am I going to be sent back into maximum security prison.
Yeah.
I'll be thrown in the hole.
Yep.
For 2 or 3 weeks. You don't want that to happen. So the sergeant who was in charge of me was a really, really lovely guy. Like he was an, you know, you meet people in your life that are angels in disguise. He was an angel in disguise. And I got on very, very well with him. But in the back of my mind is all the time, I don't want to do anything wrong. I just don't want to do anything wrong because I don't want to end up back there. I don't want to get thrown out of
the place. So you're on edge all of the time.
All the time. It's, you know. So I wasn't there. Does that make sense? My mind wasn't just free. You understand? I was trying to control the moment all the time.
I
was trying to just behave a certain way, make sure I didn't make any mistakes. I'm 4 weeks in and 4 CIB... walk into my cell. I'm literally sitting on a computer writing. 4 CIB walk into my cell with my sergeant and say, right, out you go. They take me out of the cell. They put me into a holding cell. So they lock me into a holding cell. So I'm sitting there thinking, what the fuck is going on? Oh my God, what is happening here? About 2 hours go past and one of the CIB guys goes, come on out, brings me out. My sergeant and the CIB guy are there. Now, here's what happened to me in the cell. My mind is just, you know, you can imagine the scenario.
Totally.
You can imagine what I'm thinking.
It would be freaky.
And at one point, I just realized, you know what?
Had they told you why you're in the cell?
Because they were looking for something on the computer.
Right.
They wanted to know, was there anything on the computer?
Right.
What was I doing on the computer?
Yeah.
Now, so at one point, I just went, you know what? I trust life. I trust the universe. If you want to send me back to the hole, if that's where you want to send me, if that's where I need to be.
If that's where you need to be,
I'm okay with it.
Right.
I'm really, really, I'm okay with it. Now, in saying that, there was a part of me was okay, but there's a part of me wasn't okay.
Yeah.
Both things were happening, but I was open to the concept that I have to just trust life.
Yeah.
When are you going to just let go, Mitch?
Yeah.
When are you just going to, I mean, you've learned all this stuff. You understand all this information. There comes a point where you're just going to have to let go. So just let go.
Yep.
And it was like life was creating this scenario for me to get that moment. Now, I didn't fully reach that moment in that moment. Cell door opens. Ken walks in, the copper, with the CIB guy, and they walk me down to the cell. They open the cell door, and on the screen is a pornographic picture. Now, I just stopped, and I looked at my sergeant, Ken, and I said, Ken, you know that there is no way that I have that computer in here for that picture. And I said, you also know that I am not interested in anything like that. Why? I'm not interested in anything like that. I've more important things to do with my time and my money, my time and my mind, than to be sitting looking at something like that. And then I looked at the CIB guy and I said, you know, because you can see that that image has not been opened while I've been in, or that computer's been in here. Ken looks at the CIB guy and the CIB goes, yeah, he's right. And Ken swore at him and said, you get yourself and you get your people and you get the F out of my, don't be wasting my time.
Yeah.
And then they were marched out of the police station. Ken turned around, came back and apologized to me, said, Mitch, I'm sorry about that. He said, that won't happen again. Just get on with your time. And it was never discussed again. But I think the point here is, even if I'm dealing with someone that is physically unwell, they don't understand that what's going on in their mind is, you know, your energy is fueling one of two things, health or unhealth, lack of health. You know, homeostasis or lack of homeostasis and being out of balance.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, talking to this chap this morning, I said to him, you just have to surrender. And I said, I know that the concept of surrendering right now is too big, but surrender, the first, you know, when an army surrenders, the first thing that they do is they get that the game is up. But it takes months, and in some cases, years and years and years for them to fully surrender. Because the first thing is that the army has to surrender, it has to be registered, then the message has to get out to all the soldiers, then they have to be captured.
So basically you're saying it takes time. Surrender is not just, okay, I'm letting go.
Everything is gone.
No, all over.
The country has to be overtaken. The systems have to be looked at. The government has to have a new ruler put in place. You know, the people have to be given a clearer message. And this takes years. But the point is that you have to be open to the fact that perhaps life has your back. And when you surrender, because when you're not surrendering, you're in control of how you want to see things roll out.
So, sorry, say that again. When you're not surrendering,
you're in control of how you want to see things roll out. You have this visual in your mind of how you want things to happen.
Yeah.
But when you surrender properly and when you let go, the way in which things happen are always over and above what you expect.
Yep.
You know, that's when miracles occur. And perhaps life is trying to bring you what you want, but in order for you to get it, you need to let go.
Right.
Perhaps life is trying to bring you the success that you want in your relationship with your partner, but to get there, you have to just let go. You have to surrender. And, you know, for me, I really learned a lot about surrendering at that moment. And I was sitting with some of the guys the other day, and I said to them, which do you like, daytime or nighttime? And they were all like, I love daytime. And they said, what do you like? And I said, well, I love daytime, but I also have something with nighttime. And the reason I have something with nighttime is that when I was in prison, at night, you can't see the stars. You can't see the moon, you can't see the stars. In the day, you can get out and look up at the sky, but at nighttime, you can't see any of those things. So for 18 months, I never saw the stars. So, but for me, I remember walking out into a caged area that night. And walking into that caged area and looking through the cage up at the skies and just saying thank you. You know, I just get it. It's okay, I get it. I understand that surrendering is a process. Because when we, you know, we surrender to surrender, there's the first level of that we have to be okay with. That first level of energy we got to be okay with.
Yeah.
Then we do it again. Okay, I get it. I'm willing to let go. Just thank you, I get that there's something to see here, something for me to get here, and then you surrender at another level, and then you adapt and you're okay with that level.
Does that make sense?
So I think it's important for us to understand that if we get back to where we started off, and where we started off was, we were talking about...
Unconscious programs.
And maybe the start is to just surrender to a new program.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Or the possibility of a new program.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's...
Get rid of the probability, which is knowing the outcome.
Yeah. Because I think sometimes it's difficult because people don't necessarily... I know even for me, people don't necessarily see that there's another option. And just even the possibility that there's another option is the start. Mm. Does that make sense? There's a possibility that it doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
There's a possibility that I can run another program. There's a possibility that I don't have to view my life with the with the lens that I'm viewing my life.
Yeah.
And
then what?
And surrendering to that possibility in itself, as opposed to a whole new...
And to get rid of the concept of the immediate gratification of surrender.
Yeah.
I mean, there is no immediate gratification of surrender. And, to you know, when an army surrenders, you know, there's a part of them, of the soldiers, that are relieved because they can go back to their homes, their wives, you know, they're going to live. Their buddies have died all around them. But there's also a part of them that doesn't want to surrender because they feel defeated and da-da-da-da. You have to be able to go through those things.
And have both of those things happen.
But there's a magic that happens in between both of those places.
Yeah.
You know, the magic doesn't happen on the plus or the minus. The magic happens in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle.
You know, we're used to the minus. We're used to the plus. The somewhere in the middle is what frightens us the most.
Yeah.
You know, that the magic of what occurs within our lives when we really let go.
And we
really start to understand the power of surrender. That's when we get over and above what we expect. Mm.
Oh, good talk.
Yeah, it was a good one, wasn't it?
Do you reckon I should have another go at trying to get on one of these hammocks now?
Yeah.
I'm not. It was so ungraceful.
Yeah. No,
I don't know. I'm not going to do it.
Get on it.
It's very wet. That's my excuse. Anyway, we're going to do another podcast from Rishikesh, I think.
Rishikesh, are we?
Yeah.
Oh, great. So
we're heading to Rishikesh today.
The yoga capital of the world.
I love Rishikesh.
It's beautiful. It's a really amazing place. So we've just come from this 5-star resort, and one of the guys started to say last night, okay, let's get back into the action. They've had the 5-star resort thing, and so you guys are gonna love it.
All right,
live your life inspired, people. Love is the only way. Bye.
See ya.